You are listening to WUSB Stony Brook 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Trevor, and this is Country Pocket Rewind. We've got some classic interviews for you today. First up, we'll have Kelly Hunt talk about her album, Ozark Symphony. There's a lot of longing and vulnerability on this album, talking about just being the type of person when everyone knows exactly what's on her mind. And, you know, I can definitely relate to that. Later in the show, we're going to talk politics with Corey Reinisch of the Harvest Thieves, based on his album, As the Sparks Fly Upward. So stay tuned, because right after these PSAs, you'll hear the first track, Ozark Symphony.
Parents, we know we can't protect our kids from everything. Eventually, they're going to bump their heads or scrape their knees. But we can protect them from six types of cancer. HPV, or human papillomavirus, is a common, preventable virus that can cause cancer later in life. The HPV vaccine prevents human papillomavirus and all the cancers it can cause. The American Cancer Society recommends getting your sons and daughters the HPV vaccine starting at age 9 to protect them later in life.
The I Have a Dream Foundation is based on an extraordinary promise that businessman Gene Lang made in 1981. He went to the sixth grade class of PS 121 in Harlem, the same elementary school he'd attended 50 years earlier, and told them that if they finished high school, he would pay their college tuition. More than 90% of them graduated, and some 60% went on to college. The program was so successful that it's been replicated in 64 cities around the U.S. Today, there are more than 180 I Have a Dream projects pledging college educations to more than 13,500 students. Studies have shown that students in these programs are less likely to be in trouble with the law, better able to resist peer pressure, and more likely to attend college than their peers. To support, visit www.ihad.org. That's www.ihad.org.
Every 2 minutes, an American is sexually assaulted. The majority of victims know their attacker. It could be your friend, your neighbor, or someone you met at a party. If you said no, it's rape. And it's a crime. This is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Call the National Sexual Assault Hotline today at 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
They have a certain shade of perfect in the half-dark. The sun waits just beneath the surface for the changing of the guard. And the moon hangs heavy, ready to give way. Is that how we are? Two ships passing in the night like opposing stars. Just close enough to keep you.
I
We are here today with Kelly Hunt. The new album is Ozark Symphony, and you just heard the title track. Kelly, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing really good, especially hearing that album. Explain Ozark Symphony to me, because it almost feels like you have two still living people haunting a place, and it is hauntingly beautiful.
Thank you. I guess it is kind of rooted in the places that have sort of meant the most to me through my life. And Ozark Symphony, that kind of came to be the title track because it seemed to, this whole record seemed to be kind of about journey and getting in the sort of in-between spaces. And the Ozarks have always been, I've never lived squarely in them, but they've always been sort of the place I've passed through to get from one destination to the next. And I grew up in Memphis. I ended up in Kansas City for 8 years, and you pass right through the Arkansas Ozarks and then the Missouri Ozarks on that drive that I made many times. And it just kind of also seemed to embody a little bit my style, like, which is, I grew up with a lot of classical influences and, but also deeply rooted in the folk tradition. And so Ozark Symphony seemed to kind of embody that in a phrase. It's an album of sort of journeying through relationships and rites of passage and sort of, different moves that I've made in my adult life. And so It's a very personal one for me, this record. I guess they all kind of are, but.
So a part of you will never leave this place in response to the person you're pining for. And on your behalf, you're leaving words behind in the form of wind and birds and hills. Tell me about how it feels to have a longing deep enough to quite literally let the world know so that it can pass the message on.
Yeah, I think I am kind of a creature of longing. I think just by nature, I guess we all are to a degree, but that's always been a very nostalgic kind of person. And there is something about, you know, I think even moving away from home, like I grew up in Memphis. I lived here till I was 18, and I've not moved back, and sort of have this sense of I don't want to move back here because I actually like missing it and then coming back to it and feeling that homecoming. You know, I think that's the kind of person I am. I kind of like that tension between going and coming back. And so I think I probably longing is a big theme in my first record. It's a big theme in this record. And I think it fits that theme of journey because you're kind of in search of something, and that there's always this sort of restlessness of trying to find, you know, trying to in search of something. So yeah, it's I guess that song and that particular part of it that you quoted is, yeah, about trying to make peace with being a restless person, you know, trying to kind of find some sort of centering or groundedness within that nagging kind of feeling of loss or longing, or I don't know, trying to find a place in that that will let you find rest. I don't know. It's interesting.
It is interesting. Like I said, it almost feels like somewhere in the restlessness you wind up haunting home.
Sure. Yeah. It's a good way to put it.
What is it like being someone who expresses these deep emotions for a living?
It's a good question. Oh, it's a mixed bag, I guess. And in one way, I feel very privileged to, you know, that's ingredient to my work, because I was talking to someone the other day about, I can't imagine if I didn't have that sort of creative nature to where I could make use of life in that way and of my experiences and of difficult emotions, like being able to channel them into writing song. It's such a therapeutic thing. It's such a feels like a constructive, you know, use of something that is painful or hard. And so if I didn't have that, I don't know what I'd do without that. But also, you know, I think it's a privilege to be able to kind of enter people's lives that way and maybe help them navigate these emotions that we all share as human beings. And our circumstances are maybe different, but that same sort of root elemental emotion is the same. So it's really kind of amazing to me that I get to connect with people through my own experiences, you know, in such a deep way. I think also sometimes it is, you know, it's like you kind of, part of the cost of the job is that you do have to kind of tap back into those emotional places that are sometimes painful. You have to kind of keep the wound open to a degree by kind of re-entering it and singing that and being present to it. Like you do have to kind of go to some painful places over and over again. So it's, yeah, it's interesting. But I think on the whole, it's something that I've always been very an emotional creature and kind of like occupying that space. So it's natural to me.
And it comes naturally to you to share your own experiences. You know, you're not not out there telling fictional stories.
Yeah, some of them, you know, some of them are stories that aren't mine, but that I kind of, it passes through the filter of me and my personality and my ability to empathize, but it's not necessarily my story, you know, but a lot of times it is rooted in my own story. And, I feel like that's kind of, there's a line on a song and on the song called Everybody Knows on this record. That's what story can I tell if not my own? Like, I kind of feel like I have to at least tell my own story, and then maybe I earn some right to kind of try to tell someone else's story too. but if I can't tell my own story, then I don't feel like I deserve to tell anybody else's.
That is an interesting way to put it. We're going to be right back with Kelly Hunt.
Knocking, I will answer. Seeking, you will find. Everybody knows what's on my mind. You see just who I am. If you are in between the lines, everybody knows what's on my mind. I can't hide.
Thank you.
seeking you'll find. Nobody knows what's on my mind. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows what's on my mind. It's the same blood that's flowing through my head and my heart. Each needs the other, each plays its part. Each is dead set against what the other one wants. And neither one's yielding. And each has its reasons for taking up arms. Head cries out treason, accusing the heart of bearing its breast to love's poison dart. I'm declaring. It's a swift calculation and it doesn't add up. But a heart is the heart that is desperate in love, blind to the world and deaf to the voice of reason. Enslaved is the mind to the will of the heart, or it rattles its cage and it heaves at the bars and it screams and its rage through the feathers and tar. Oh, I'm caught in.
We are back with Kelly Hunt. The new album is Ozark Symphony. How often do you find that emotional side of you at conflict with your rational mind?
A lot, I'd say, most of the time. I think I'm kind of, if you were to try to split it into a side of the brain, I think I'm probably verge right-brained, but I'm very strongly left-brained too. So I've got kind of this tension between my intellect and my, like, sort of innate desire for things to make sense and to be understandable. I want to understand things. I have a curiosity about things, but also I'm a deeply feeling and kind of feeling driven person. So I feel like I am often at odds with myself. And I mean, that's my own civil war on this record. It's really kind of all about that. It's based on a letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote. I call it the My Head to My Heart letter. I think if you Google that, you could probably find it. But it's essentially this letter he wrote that is entirely a dialogue between his head and his heart. And they're like diametrically opposed and trying to like convince the other to do their bidding. And so it's this interesting kind of perspective of exactly that, of kind of the war between the head and the heart. Which I feel like I live on a daily basis for sure, in one way or another.
It's a war I think all of us wind up fighting in some way or another. I'm pretty sure my head tends to win. but what are some of the ways that you're able to playing on a line in your song, keep your heart caged if you have to? And is that something you'd actually ever want to do?
Gosh, these are great questions. I don't want to have a caged heart, so to speak. No. But I do think finding some sort of harmony between the head and the heart, that's a desirable place to be. I think finding that balance of where, you know, there isn't that kind of conflict, the middle way is probably the best way to go, you know? And so I think, no, I want to have a free heart, but also a free mind and an open mind. And I think that balance is one that requires constant engagement to kind of hold that balance. I think it's like, but that's what I strive for, what I want, what I think everybody wants is to be at peace, you know, to have a sense inner harmony. But takes a lot of questing and energy and really kind of life experience, hopefully, you know, wisdom to get there, I think.
Yeah. Are you someone who feels a lot of unrequited love?
Yeah, I would say so for sure. I think a lot of my songs are about that. And I think, you know, that ties back into a sense of longing. And I think really, you know, there's, and always has been since I was a child, I think just kind of this fundamental part of my nature that is has always felt a little out of place. And I think it's part of what drives my creative life and my imagination. And I've always had a very rich kind of inner life, and I was the kind of kid that could just be by myself for hours and be totally entertained in my own mind and being and creating and doing things. And so I think that's kind of to some degree ingredient to the creative life, is to be able to go into that. Like one of my favorite writers, Carson McCullers, one of the characters in her book, she talks about the inner room, her inner room. And it's just that kind of like secret space within herself where she escapes to kind of, and I think, yeah, that's always been my tendency, is to kind of draw into that space and feel like that's where I could be myself and feel, you know. But then of course we're built for community and built for connection. And so I think it's always been my default to kind of feel apart from things. And maybe it's harder for me to feel like I belong, you know, and so, and I think we all feel that to varying degrees, but yeah, that's kind of just been a defining aspect of my sort of personality, I think, from since I can remember, is a feeling kind of like I was felt yeah, apart of from things. I don't know how else to put it. But so yeah, I think a lot of that sense of longing and that restlessness is rooted in that sensibility, what for whatever reason.
I don't know. I feel like I'm also a very in my head sort of creature, and you know, I could relate to some of these themes. I don't know if I'm the best at unrequited love. Not the best at loving anything besides my cat, but it is nice to hear the echoes of someone else's mind, to sort of keep your own echoing mind company at times.
Sure, absolutely.
And actual human connection that doesn't just involve listening to those echoes couldn't soothe it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really one of the great powers of art of any kind of, you know, is that, you know, I love reading books and sort of that. I can remember having those, and I still have these feelings all the time, but like the first time that I listened to a piece of music and felt like, whoa, this makes me feel something that I feel like I'm feeling what they were feeling, or reading a book where, you know, you feel like that character is, their thought processes could have been taken out of your brain, like that sense of connection of like, whoa, I'm not the only one that feels this way or thinks this way. Or I think those are really powerful moments of yeah, just a feeling like, yeah, you're not alone. And that's such an important thing, but art has the power to really kind of bring that to the forefront and create those opportunities for connection and solidarity. And that's just, it's so important. We need that.
Well, I like to close out my interviews by having the artist choose a song they had nothing to do with creating that sort of fits the theme of their album. So give me a nice longing song.
Oh, exactly the one I've been singing it all morning. Boots of Spanish Leather, Bob Dylan.
Boots of Spanish Leather, all right. Kelly Hunt, thanks so much for coming on. The new album is Ozark Symphony.
Oh, I'm sailing away, my own true love. I'm sailing away in the morning. Is there something I can send you from across the sea? From the place that I'll be landing. No, there's nothing you can send me, my own true love. There's nothing I'm wishing to be owning. Just to carry yourself back to me unspoiled. From across that lonesome ocean. Ah, but I just thought you might want something fine. Made of silver or of golden. Either from the mountains of Madrid or from the coast of Barcelona. But if I had the stars of the darkest night and the diamonds from the deepest ocean, I'd forsake them all for your sweet kiss. For that's all I'm wishing to be owning. But I might be gone a long old time, and it's only that I'm asking, is there something I can send you to remember me by, to make your time more easy passing? Oh, how can you ask me again? It only brings me sorrow, the same thing I would want today. I will want again tomorrow. Oh, I got a letter on a lonesome day. It was from her ship, a sailing, saying I don't know when I'll be coming back again. It depends on how I'm feeling. If you, my love, must think that way, I'm sure your mind is a roaming. I'm sure your thoughts are not with me, but with the country to where you're going. So take heed of the western winds. Take heed of the stormy weather. And yes, there's something you can send back to me. Spanish boots are Spanish leather.
That's it for the Kelly Hunt portion of the show. Up next, we're going to go with Corey Reinisch, the lead singer of the Harvest Thieves, and he's going to talk about his album As the Sparks Fly Upward, specifically Hucksters and Insurrectionists. The first track we'll hear is Birth of a Salesman.
A recent study published by the American Cancer Society states that of the people who are going to get colon cancer in America, about 13% will be under 50 years of age. It's the third most common cancer diagnosed in the United States. It starts as a polyp, a little abnormal growth in the large intestine, which over time could become cancerous and potentially spread to other parts of the body. The good news is that a colonoscopy could prevent that from happening, and most of them are routine. The procedure can save a life. It used to be recommended that people get there first near age 50, but the recommended age seems to be dropping, especially for people with a family history of polyps or colon cancer. A colonoscopy does require the drinking of some unpleasant tasting liquid, but that's the most difficult part. After that, it's almost a non-event, much like taking a nap. If one has polyps, they can be removed. If a person doesn't have polyps, even better. So next time you see your physician, mention it. Maybe you're due.
The Harry Chapin Food Bank has been on a mission to feed Long Island's food insecure and stamp out the root causes of hunger since our founding by the late Harry Chapin in 1980. In 2021, we distributed 14 million pounds of food, the equivalent of 11.5 million meals. But the work is not done, and Long Island Cares is committed to serving Long Island as long as the need is great. To donate, go to licares.org. You can also visit the site to find your local food bank in locations like Bethpage, Hampton Bays, Hopog, Huntington Station, Freeport, and Lindenhurst.
Mm-hmm. I'm forever in supply, 'cause I am always in demand. Struck a deal for an empire of everlasting flame. Every man is a target, every man will know my
Today, I'm here with the lead singer and songwriter of The Harvest Thieves. His name is Corey Reinisch, and the new album he wrote is called As the Sparks Fly Upward. The first song you just heard is called Birth of a Salesman. And Corey, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really good, Trevor. It's our first cold spell down here in Austin for the fall season, so it's nice and cold and rainy outside, and we are very happy about that.
Yeah. 2 days ago, we had 80-something degree temperatures, and then the day after, we were in the mid-50s. So,
yeah,
it was quite an experience.
It was sort of that way here, too. Yeah.
Back to the music. Tell me about what makes American society so susceptible to the forces at play in Birth of a Salesman and to hucksters in general.
I've thought a lot about that, and I have at many points in my life. When I was writing that song, I was sort of thinking about that. I think it's the sixth or seventh chapter in Grapes of Wrath where he's talking about the used car salesman, and that whole chapter is just genius. It's real short. It's almost like a little vignette type of thing. But that's a true American trope, and it always has been with us, and we see it nowadays so blatantly in our mainstream society. And I've always been fascinated by that. So I guess to answer your question, what makes us susceptible to that? Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the system that we've agreed upon. I think capitalism, in particular late stage capitalism, gives a quite the breeding ground for the huckster and the snake oil salesman. But we've always had those characters and those types in American society from the get-go. And I'm not so interested in the figure himself or herself or themselves, their group. I'm more interested in our inability to parse out bullshit. I think that's what fascinates me more than anything, because I guess I've always had a very strong instinct. It's kind of like, who is this guy? Like, I've always had that in my life. And when people don't have that, or they don't question what they're seeing, I mean, you take a Trump figure, for example, and, you know, he's one of many, but he's an obvious one. So I just, there's not a fiber in my being that doesn't see it, how much this is all just bullshit. It's just a sales game. So, you know, he might have even been a main inspiration for that song. But I'm fascinated by our inability to parse out what's true and what's not. And even more fascinating to me is when this figure I'm following, or this ideology that I'm falling for, actually is detrimental to me, when I'm being convinced that it's not, but it actually is detrimental. It's working against my best interest. And I guess in some way, the snake oil salesman figure has always been that way. But yeah, I definitely was looking at it from that angle when writing that song. And, you know, it's I'm not the first artist to do this, to use the devil as a metaphor in a song, but I think that I think that we let the devil in the door, and now we don't know what to do with him. So
yeah, we definitely seem to be struggling with the devil, who found his way down an escalator into our living rooms. And yeah, if we're talking about letting the devil in the door, the next song I'm going to get to is called Empire Fall. And the devil sort of knocked his way into the door, broke some windows, shoved some police officers over. And what I found really remarkable about the song you wrote is that you're talking about January 6th, but at its core, it's a song about love. So how did you write a January 6th love song? And what about that day led you to think about loved ones?
Well, thank you. That's a good question. I think the easiest answer for me is because I was currently in love with someone. So that day is significant for me for many ways, but it's just this accumulation of bullshit for years and years and years, almost half a decade. And, you know, of course that happens. I mean, of course that happens. We saw it coming from a mile away. Maybe we didn't know exactly what it was going to look like, but we knew something like that was going to happen. And if you didn't know something like that was going to happen, then you just weren't paying attention, or you weren't able to frame effectively what was going on in our society. So that the significance of that day was not shocking to me. Everybody clutched their pearls and kind of shrieked in horror, and there were some horrific things that happened that day. Don't get me wrong, I'm not belittling that, but it was going to happen. Something like that was going to happen. And I guess the love aspect of that song was just sort of a resignation to being tired of it all, and just saying it feels like there's not much we can do to stop this tidal wave of horse. And we're all so sick of it. I mean, even one of the lines in there is, I feel so weary. I can't remember the line off the top of my head, but maybe you are too. It was a resignation to just say, yes, this is happening. It feels like it's going to continue to happen. But at the end of all this, at least I still have you in my life. So I thought that was a nice sentiment. It felt like one that had been missing a lot just in our cultural purview for a while. So I don't know. I felt like there was a balance there, that there was a little bit of light in some darkness, and I wanted to write about it.
So not wanting to kneel for a king is a bit of the message in that song. I would imagine that if you asked anyone in Texas whether or not they would want to kneel for a king, you would get nearly 100% say, oh, hell no. So why is it? Or what do you think is going on? Do you think that the red majority down there understands that they're voting for someone who wants to be king?
I think at first they didn't understand that. I think that when he came along, he was giving voice to people who felt like they had no voice, whether that was true or not. That's debatable in my mind, but that's the reality. And I've lived here my entire life, and I've grown up in rural Texas, and I've never not lived in Texas. So I feel like I have a bit of an authority here to speak on this matter. I truly believe it was with the best of intentions that support was thrown behind this movement at first, because I believe it came out of frustration. And there's a lot of people in our society who are frustrated, and it has nothing to do with where you fall on the political spectrum. However, over time, these well-meaning and well-intended people, I think there started to be a darkness that we've all seen, and bad behavior and petulance. It started peeking its way through pretty quick. It wasn't a movement about change. It started to be sort of a vengeance ideology, or at least that's how I saw it. And you know, some of these well intentions started to turn dark, and it gave license to maybe parade some of the darker aspects of our characters and our value systems. And I, among many, had a big problem with that. So when I say I won't kneel for a king, that's my way of saying that I vehemently deny your ideology and do not agree with it. And I think, to answer your question as far as why it would seem a group of people here in this region who value their independent thought and their liberties and their freedoms, so to speak, don't understand that they're putting their support behind someone who does not have their best interests in mind. I think it's because they're too far gone. That's not a rosy thought, and it's not a comforting one either. But this movement and this ideology has gone beyond one man now. And now it's just anger and revenge and vengeance. And what's good for me is mine. And what's good for you is not good for me. So there is no compromise. There's a real darkness to it. And I could see it coming on early on. I mean, that's why I didn't throw my support behind it. But yeah, it's an odd thing to see people throw support behind something that's quite obviously doing them a detriment.
Well, let's hear Empire Falls and we'll be right back.
Settles under the morning sun, so I hide myself in my dreams, the fountain from which we all drink is dried up and made it straight for hell. Toss a few cents and while the fever descends, pretend we're all all be alone. I pull up my boots as I run from the news while the hypocrites speak in tongues. But on the streets while the monuments sleep, I believe we're all pushing our luck. Not grown all these strange faces dressed up in the red, white, and blue. They're storming the walls while the empire falls, and all I can think of is you.
and spell.